My name's Dick G, and I'm paralyzed over alcohol. G stands for Gillespie, and I'll tell you why I say it's Dick G. Some people, they get upset because they say, anonymity, my God, you know, and I'll tell them it's G, G-E-E, you know what I mean? Anyway, I brought my sponsor with me, Bob O. He just celebrated 32 years of sobriety. He's going well. And his wife just celebrated putting up with him for over 62 years plus, right? And that's my beautiful wife back there, Dottie Ann. And anyway, let's see. I guess I better start at the beginning. I was born. No, I don't want to start that far back, right? I'm a product of the 40s. I was born in the 1940s. I said, I'll tell you, when I was. It was just past all the hard times. It's back, when you got caught, drinking booze underage. The cop smacked you across the head. He took you home and just took your beer, and the cops had a good time. You know, all them days are gone, right? So anyway, I grew up. My grandmother raised 9 of her children, 3 of my father's children, and 3 of my cousin's children. So she raised a lot of kids. She was poor, but no worse than anybody else back in them days. We didn't know we were poor, because everybody was the same. Everybody passed clothes along. The neighborhood kid, Junior, when he grew up a little bit, he passed his clothes on, All the doors were unlocked and everything like that. So we used to have beer parties and all that stuff like that, and I never drank. For some reason, I didn't feel bad when somebody said, "Hey, Dick, you want a drink?" I said, "Nah, I don't want a drink." And it's, "Come on, have one." I said, "I don't want one," because I could see, that booze and it was making people stupid. My two brothers, they drank more of booze, than I would ever think of drinking in a lifetime. And yet, neither one of them's alcoholic. What a hell of a note that is, right? So anyway, they would be robbing someplace, and the fact that they stole a lot, though they got caught a lot, and they made every institution, all the way up from the Maryland Training School, all the way through the Maryland Penitentiary. But I could see, when they were robbing someplace, and I would hear the sirens coming, and I would say to them, I'd say, "Look, can't you hear the signs?" And they'd take a slug of booze and say, "Yeah, but we can get this thing shortly," and always got caught. And I always thought to myself, the drunken, stupid bums, But also, I was tied up with a couple of friends, that boxed in the policeman of boys club back then. They had this, boxing program. And those guys didn't drink either. But, they weren't hanging with my brothers or anything like that. So I didn't. Back then, we had father and son, the baseball games, with the crate, a cake and all that stuff like that. So I'm sure booze crossed my lips somewhere, before I was 21 years age. But I never ordered a drink until I walked into a bar at 21 years of age. And the reason why I did that was I met a guy who was good at his job, and he was the best in the whole world. Now, I ain't talking about England or USA or the whole world. They flew him all over the place trying to teach people this job of making steel, and they couldn't do it. But Fred, he was a real humble guy. He was an old guy. He wore a coat, coveralls, made a ton of money, could have lived anywhere. But they lived in a row house, where his mother raised him up, and he always had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and he was good at his job. And I thought, damn, I'll make friends with him. In 2 weeks, I'll know his job, and I'll be the best of the world. I always had this grandiose thing going on. So Fred stopped at this Stazak's bar. Stazak was a state senator for Maryland. And I walked in there, and I didn't know what to order. And Fred was drinking a shot and a beer. And I said, now give me the same thing that Fred's drinking. Now, Fredman was kind of like a good sponsor around AA. Although, I mean, again, he was not in AA. He said to me, he said, kid, you can't drink that stuff. I said, I can drink any damn thing you can drink. He reached his pocket, he pulled out a $20 bill, he put it on a table, and he said, give that kid anything he wants. And I got that shot in beers, and I started drinking. They say I fell off the stool. I don't know. You know what I mean? But the next day, I just came to. Now I don't think that was alcoholic drinking. I think that was stupid drinking. You know, I mean, my body wasn't used to it and all that. And I did a lot of stupid drinking. Somewhere in my drinking, I mean, something happened. And I didn't see it. I mean, if I could have saw it, I'd have quit. I mean, you know, I'm not dumb. Big Booker talks about that. I mean, you know, I mean, sometimes I go to AA, and I think it's a bunch of people who can't think. They're misfits. And if they wouldn't have found booze, they'd have been an idiot or with something else. No. As Big Book says, that means, you know, when we're not drinking, I mean, we're kind of like a normal people. That means that we make a little mistakes and make a few right ones. I mean, we can seem to, be illogical about it. And, but somewhere in my drinking, something happened. And I don't know what it is. AA doesn't know what it is. AA members know everything. I mean, you can go to a newcomer's meeting, and a newcomer will be sitting next to maybe some old guy that wants to be nice to him. And this guy, will tell him exactly, why he drank. Well, you know, you had these problems, and you felt bad, and this and that, and all that. And I always say to myself, I drank because the Colts lost. I drank because the Colts won. I just drank, I drank, I drank, you know. And I couldn't see it coming. And I couldn't believe it was the booze. Because dormant in my own thinking, and I've did this a lot, going through life. I've looked at the facts, and I've added them up, and I've come to a conclusion, and believed at the conclusion long enough that it was absolutely true. And I said to myself, if it was the booze, why is it sometimes I have a good time? If I could find that 13th drink, if I could just drink up until where everything was going right, everything I touched I turned to gold, you know what I mean? If I'd only stopped then, I'd have been all right. You know, always had just, some reason. And anyway, the Big Book talks about that. We come up with reasons, why we drank and all that, but none of them seem plausible, because it just doesn't make sense. And my daughter has a somewhat of the problem I have. She has an allergy. And she's allergic to the oranges. So, she said to me, she breaks out in all these hives. So after a while, we said, Sandy, I think it's the oranges. I don't know. I don't think it's the oranges. I like oranges. You know what I mean? Anyway, I took her to a professional, the doctor or the AA group or whatever, you know what I mean, if you're making that analogy. And the doctor said, it's the oranges, Sandy. I don't know why, but it's the acid in the oranges. Don't eat the oranges. We went out of there, and about a day later, she said, I like oranges, and ate the damn orange and broke out in hives. The difference is, she said, the doctorman was right and just doesn't eat the oranges. I don't have to hide them on Christmas time. No Orange Anonymous meetings, nothing. Just don't eat the oranges. Doesn't care whether a sister eats oranges or Joe eats oranges or the girlfriend eats oranges. If I could do that, I wouldn't eat AA. My problem is, I got this other little thing that I don't like. It's a little glitch in my head that always thinks it's a good idea that you would take a drink. And I don't know why it's there, but it's there. So consequently, I started drinking there at the 21, and it went downhill. And I got to a point. The booze bothers other people. You drink too much. You bother the cops. I used to park in people's basements. Now, I don't mean just hit the wall, right through the wall, park in the basement, and the lady would run down the steps. Don't go nowhere, you know, and I'm a smart ass old girl. Where do you think I'm going to go, lady? I mean, you know, all drunked up. And the cops would come, lock you up, but they didn't give you a DWIs back then. You bought your groceries at the local master. In a mattress place for a year, you know what I mean? It was all politics back then. But anyway, my drinking problem bothered a lot of other people, and that bothered me. You know, I mean, I wasn't heartless. I wasn't one who said, "I don't care. Give me a drink. Hell with the kids, man. I'm drinking." I never ever chose booze once over top of my family. Now, facts I says I did, but I didn't consciously say, hell with the family. I lost my driver's license, and I said to myself, damn, man, that ain't too bad, because there's a bar on every bus stop, you know. So I, you know, and I could tell my wife, I got to leave work 2 hours early a minute because I got to get the bus and all this, and I'd go in a joint and I'd drink. And a bus would come, and I would have that half a glass of beer, and I would try to get it down, and the bus would go by. And I said, damn, you know what I mean? I never, ever left anything in the glass. All those clues, I should have told me something. But that's the baffling thing about this, you know? And I'll tell you this, I didn't want to be different. I didn't want to be the only sissy at Sparrow's Point, the steel mills, boys, I can't stop, I can't drink. I thought, no, man, you know what I mean? What the hell's wrong with me? I always thought it was something wrong with me that I could fix. I didn't understand, you know, because I didn't know anything about it at the time, that I have this illness, and the reason why I call it illness and not nothing else is because of the big book says, you know, we call it illness. Continue in presenting this illness. It ain't a bad habit. It ain't addiction for me. It's an illness I have. And the only solution for me, whether I like it or not, is spiritual. I didn't like it. I said, no. You know, that's polka. That's them people who's trying to warp my mind. Anyway, I kept on drinking, and my booze started bothering me. And what I mean by that is that I would come home drunk, and I would wake up in the morning, and my kidsman would say something like, hey, Dad, can you buy me tennis shoes? I said, sure, I can buy you tennis shoes. I'm a big steel worker, you know. I don't think about it. I don't spend all the money, you know. Sure, I can buy you tennis shoes. Why? You know, I mean, what's this big deal here? Well, Dad, I mean, we're taking Jim up with our hard shoes, and all the other kids are all laughing at us. And that went right into my spirit. I said, Jesus, God, you know what I mean? God damn. And I'm going to buy them shoes Friday. And I meant that. I wasn't some jerk who was just saying that. I meant Friday I was going to buy them shoes. And I would brag about it. You know what I mean? Boys, I tell you one day, man, I'm going to go get my kids into some shoes. I was good at bragging about things, too. I was a quick starter and a slow finisher. But anyway, I would promise about it. Friday would come, and the boys would say, hey, Dick, are you going to stop? I'd say, okay, but I got to be out of there at 4 o'clock. I had no idea that once I took the first drink, because of this illness I had, which I didn't want and I didn't believe, it was a no-telling, what I was going to do. History says I was going to keep on drinking, and that's what happened. And I would close the bars up, and I might buy a six-pack going out, or else I might go to somebody's house. You know, I might be gone for 2 days, 3 days, or 4 days, and then I would come back. I never liked the embarrassment of being drunk. I never liked being dirty. I mean, you know, I would wake up dirty, but I would always gravitate to an area where I fit in. I mean, no matter, I mean, you know, the hair all messed up and, not shaving all that, I'd go down to Baltimore Block. I would fit in down there. And I would get a flop house maybe for about $4 or $5 back then. And I would fit in. But then again, sooner or later, I would straighten up. I would go back home. I would try to do okay. And I would go on. I would build their hopes up and slam them down again. You know what I mean? I would get drunk again. And I would wake up maybe on a Christmas morning. I would wake up and I would start thinking about, God, man, I ought to be home buying my kids presents. What the hell was wrong with me? You know? And I kept saying, what the hell was wrong with me? Well, a set of circumstances. I was all drunked up. And I said to this person, I said, I'm going to quit. I'm going to call AA. Now, I don't know, you know what I mean? I must have heard them words in a bar or something. And I said, I'm going to call AA. Well, they were just a little smarter than I thought they was, because they said, well, go ahead. Jesus Christ. So I called AA. And they had a meeting on a Thursday night. I said, well, it's Thursday night. It's a little late. You know what I mean? I can't walk over there because, you know, I don't have any license. I'll drive you. I said, Jesus Christ. Now, believe me, I walked up. It was like a sidewalk about 20 feet long. I walked up. I turned around. And had they pulled off, I wouldn't have went in that building. I mean, I no more believed I was an alcoholic and cared, I mean, to totally stop drinking than a man in the moon. But I went in. And I met some very nice people. And I believe AA did its job. It planted the seed that someday, if I ever wanted it, it was there. But I said, nope, I'm not going to be an alcoholic. Because the other thing that happened on my first AA meeting, I didn't feel at home. I felt crummy. I had that little knot in my stomach, you know, that you get in when you want to have that first fight in a behind the high school. Okay, I'll meet you there. And then about 5 minutes, you're walking around and all your friends are happy. You know, you got that little queasiness. I mean, you know what I mean? Up until the fight starts anyway. You know what I mean? And I had that queasiness. I thought, man, you know, man, I can't be an alcoholic. You know what I mean? That's them losers. I just can't be an alcoholic. So I went out and I kept drinking and it got worse. It got so worse that I begged for death. I said, man, God, if you're up there, God, just let me lay down and not wake up. Just let me just pass away. I'd go lay on the railroad tracks and I would lay there. I don't know where all the trains were at, but they never came. And so I finally got to a point where I said to myself, I said, damn, I think I might be an alcoholic, but I ain't going to AA. Because if I go to AA, everybody's going to think I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to get that AA tattooed on my head and everybody's going to know it. And I don't want to be labeled alcoholic. I don't know why, but the stigma just scared the hell out of me. And I said, I got to stop this drinking. And I tried. Of course, it didn't work. So my two brothers, by this time, they're in trouble, and they're drinking a lot and all that, and they get into these studies where they try to figure out why alcoholics drink. Now, Ballmer City, I mean, has spent thousands and thousands of dollars up in Ballmer City Hospital. They built a bar in the ward. These nurses all used to come in with the short skirts and all that stuff like that. And they would serve these guys drinks. And they were trying to teach them how to drink right. And these guys never turned down a drink. They also had these little games that if you pulled this thing along enough, you'd get a drink. Well, they would be, they're doing anything, but they never missed a drink. None of them. Every one of them always got to drink. But I found out that in that behavioral study place, they gave this pill called antabuse. And I thought, there's the answer. Man, I'll just go pop that antabuse pill. Nobody will know it. You know what I mean? And I went up there and I said to the girl, I said, well, look, I got this big job. I don't know why I said that, but I got this big job. I'm just a little steel worker is all I was, But I got this big job and I can't let people know. She said, look, we don't really care if you give us the right name. Just take the damn pill. So I gave him a Mike Brown. Now, Mike Brown, I worked with him for about 20 years. He doesn't know it, but he's it took me antabuse for about 3 years. And I used to go up there and I would take the pill. And the fear of drinking, would keep me even from drinking. But I didn't understand, I also had this illness called alcoholism. And that sooner or later, regardless of fear or anything else, the drink would present itself, and I wouldn't have any mental defense against it. I would either drink or not. I didn't understand all that because I wasn't hanging around AA. You know, I mean, man, I wasn't going to get that label on me. So anyway, I took the antabuse, and just the fact I didn't drink, nothing else, my life got better. I started working better. I started showing up at work. My bossman saw me going to show up for 7 days straight. He said, look at him, he ain't missed a day in seven. You know, 7 days. Now, there were other people who never missed a day in 20 years, but, you know, they never got recognized, you know? I mean, look at Dick. Look how well Dick's doing. You know? Promote Dick again. And I started getting me promoted, and, I mean, the things were doing good for me. Absolutely great. And then one day, I'm sitting there, and a guy says to me, Dick, your eyeballs are all red. And I start to take stock, and I'm sitting in a bar. I got a drink in my hand. And it's half gone, so I mean, I must be drinking it. I start to feel my heart going a mile a minute. I'm turning red. And I said, well, I mean, you know, I laid off the booze for a while, and I haven't drank in a while. And, you know, and then I took a little sip. I mean, not a big gulp, but a little sip, and I didn't drop down dead. I said, man, it's been a sugar pill all this while, and my body is. It's just because I hadn't drank in a long while, so I started drinking. Well, they hauled me up to the hospital, and they pumped my stomach out. And I said to myself, I said, well, damn, man, I can't take that pill anymore. And I wasn't being a smartass about it. I didn't want to get that sick anymore. I said, I just got to try to stop drinking. And I tried. And it got worse. And it got worse. And death meant it would have been a blessing. And that's what happens to the guys like me. I don't die. I wake up every damn time hating myself, saying, what in the hell is wrong with me? I got a family. I ain't taking care of my family. I got pride. I want to be a good worker. I was laying on a bench one time, and I heard my coworker say, you know, somebody said to me, get Dick up. Dick's supposed to help to do this. And this other coworker said, just leave him sleep. He ain't worth a hoot when he's awake. Now, I don't know of anybody else, but I didn't say, I don't care. I mean, I thought to myself, what the hell is wrong with me, you know? I found myself chasing my best friend's wife around a coffee table. You know what I mean? I came out, I thought, what the hell's wrong with me? I love George. George is a good friend of mine. What in the hell am I doing? And I thought, Jesus, God. And it kept getting worse and getting worse and going worse. Well, through another set of circumstances, I wound up at an AA meeting. I believe I was an alcoholic at the time I went into that AA meeting. I didn't understand AA. You know, I was just looking for the answers that to suit me. And I find, you know, that I'm not different, that most people who come to AA are, they want to get well, they don't want to hurt, but they're looking for the answers that kind of suit them or to make it easy on them, you know? And I would hear somebody say, I got 10 years and I never read the big book. I said, I don't see that. You know what I mean? I got plenty of time to read the big book. You know what I mean? You don't have to work the steps. I ain't worked them and I'm okay. And this guy, I mean, you know, life's going good for him and everything like that. Got 25 years and I ain't never worked the fifth step and I don't plan on working it. I said, see, what is all this hype about all this steps and all this stuff like this? If I don't drink, I'm going to be all right. Now, there's a truth in that. If I don't drink, I'm all right. The trouble is, I cannot not drink. That sooner or later, the drink presents itself. And I'm either based on my spiritual maintenance, or I ain't, and I ain't doing anything. So I always drink. So I'm going around AA, and I'm listening to all them guys who ain't doing nothing. They're doing good, I'm doing good. I got 10 people who said, hey, Dick, you're doing great. I dress up. I put my brown pants on, my blue blazer, my blue shirt. I've been wearing that now for 29 years. I got sober before September 1st, 1978, up in Baltimore. I'm wearing this tie because my kids bought it for me. And my sponsor said, you can't tell alcoholics of nothing if you can't get their attention. So I'm hoping the tie got somebody's attention. So anyway, I lost my train of thought. But anyway, I'm in AA and I'm doing pretty good. You know, I mean, I ain't drinking. I'm going to meetings, but this time I've made a couple friends. some guy came in and, after me, and I'm telling him what to do, and all this stuff. I'm active. I was a mop-up guy, and we had swinging doors going into the bathroom or where the mop was at. And if you spilt your coffee, those swinging doors banged open, and they hit the wall. Boom! And I would come riding out on a mop at 37 years old. I'd be riding a mop. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. And I'd ride out, mop the floor, and ride back. Jeez, what an idiot. What an idiot, you know? But it was attention, you know? And somebody said, what's the matter with him? And all the old-timers, I used to say this, don't worry about it. Don't worry about all that stuff. If the guy comes to AA and he eventually applies the program, he will put that mop away. I haven't rode that mop in a lot of years. A lot of years. And that's what happens. There was a few people around AA who told the truth. And I don't mean that, I mean, the people were telling lies or anything like that. They were speaking from what they knew. And these old-timers, I used to say, Dick, alcoholics of the AA type, we have never seen any of them recover that haven't had a deep, effective spiritual experience. And all that's good words, Dick. Here's all the good news. And nothing less. You better hope it's a God up there, Dick. You better tap into a power source greater than yourself. It better be a God. Anyway, I said, you know what I mean? That's them old-timers, you know what I mean? They're trying to give you that stuff. So, you know, and I mean, I really got good around AA. I mean, you know, I put on functions. I believe if I wouldn't have got drunk, I'd have been all right, because I was really moving. You know, man, I was well-liked and everything. The problem is I got drunk. Now, the good news about that drunk was, when I come off that drunk, I said to myself, what in the hell was wrong? I didn't want to drink. I liked going to AA. I thought I was doing everything right. How in the hell is it possible I hang around with the AA people and I get drunk? How the hell is that? Isn't AA the answer? Well, there's a little pamphlet out. It's that blue and white, what is it, a member's view or something like that. And it talks about guys like me who come to AA. And I think that if I sit around next to somebody who's got it, and I rub shoulders with them, I mean, you know, I'm going to catch it. Well, there's a little truth in that. It does rub off. And that pamphlet says, you know, what rubs off is rigor mortis and death. And we sicken and die before our eyes. Now, that's our literature telling us that. But I don't know that, because I ain't got time for the literature. I ain't got time for the big book and all that. You know what I mean? I want to be a superstar. I was in this little dive down in Baltimore. I was sober, I don't know, about 10 years. And my sponsor, I always wanted to catch him at something. But anyway, it was a Good Friday. And my sponsor ordered crab soup. And I ordered a fish sandwich. Because I knew that Gene was Catholic. I don't mean this sponsor. I mean that Gene's passed away. But Gene was a Catholic boy out of Boston. And I said, he ain't supposed to be eating meat on Friday. And as soon as he took a bite of that crab soup, I said, you hypocritical thing, you. And he stopped eating. He said, you know, what's the matter with you? I said, you know, you're a hypocrite. He said, why? I said, you're eating meat on Friday. And then that saying comes that always gives you that sick feeling I have when I first came in AA. He said, you really believe that, don't you? Those type of sayings just try to, you know, give me the what sayings, because I'm not sure of myself anymore now. So. And I said, yeah. He said, well, let me ask you this. Why do you believe it's meat? I said, because they call it crab meat. He said, it ain't. Now, there was a whole lot of things in life that I heard and did and just came to a conclusion and believed them so much, I would shoot my mouth off like that. So, I have to be careful what I believe. And that's why I have to read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And after reading it, I have to go to somebody else who seems to have applied it and can convince me, change that knowledge into wisdom. Because, you know, the book also talks about self-knowledge is of no avail. Now, you can know everything in a big book and still get drunk. You need somebody to make wisdom out of all that knowledge. And that's what I needed. So, after that drunk, I knew. I knew I was in trouble. And back then, I was very fortunate also because they didn't make it too easy on you. I remember one of my early meetings. I mean, you know, they have these meetings now where I come from sometimes. And they say, is there anything bothering you? Well, man, you know, I mean, I was a new alcoholic, and I heard people whine about their mother and whine about their father and whine about their car, and I thought, man, I got some troubles. And I start to whine about something, and just then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw this thing coming at me, and I reached up, and I caught it. And it was a blue quart bottle with PPP on it. I guess Paulman was the first to pity party. And it had a 6-inch nipple on it. And they said, suck on that a while. That'll keep you from whining. And I thought, geez, this big loving AA program here. But I'll tell you this, I'm so glad. They never let me dig into that negative whining stuff. I mean, that was going to make me always, sink down to the pity party. And slowly but surely, I followed those people. Well, man, when I came off that last drunk and I came up to an AA meeting, it was 100 people there, and I saw this guy. And back then, like I said, you know, they weren't appointing themselves sponsors. They knew that I had to ask for it. That part of that recovery was the breaking down of my pride. The pride hits that list that's in the book, right? And I had to ask him for help. That, you know, once I asked him for help, I would be more susceptible to what I was asking for than somebody else tell me, I'll be your sponsor and do X, Y, Z. And I remember. And it was hard for me. But I walked up to another alcoholic. I looked him dead in the eyes and I said, and his name was Lou Haynes, and I said to him, I said, Lou, please tell me how to get sober. The one thing I knew about that last drunk, I knew that I knew everything in a big book. And I knew everybody around AA. And I could put on the functions. And I could throw the dinners. And I could dress up. The only thing I didn't know how to do was to stay sober. And he said to me a classic AA answer. He said, Dick, I can't tell you how to get sober. I can tell you how I did it. And he started telling me how he did it. And he started telling me about him going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, him tapping him into a higher power. Not me, not, hey, Dick, you ought to do this. This is what I did, Dick. And that's what he did, slowly but surely. And I started following the path of another alcoholic. I didn't have to think my way through it. I just had to start following his path. And day by day, I got sober. And I had about a year. I think I had worked the first couple steps. And I had a year. And at that year, I'm standing in the back of the room, and I'm a big shot now. I got a year. So when the newcomers come over here, I'll tell you what to do. You know what I mean? Well, old Lou came in, and Lou was a man of just a few words. He was a very good guy. And he said to me, Dick, how you doing? And I had heard that jingle around AA. One day at a time, easy does it. Ain't drinking of the day. I'm about staying sober. You know, all them good lines here around AA. He said, yeah, Dick. He said, I hear that you're not taking a drink up until you take one. I thought, what the hell is this? I'm sober a year. I don't want to drink. Life's going good for me. And I chased him down. I said, you know, what do you mean by this, Lou? He said, Dick, don't you understand? You're destined to drink. You don't have any control over that. You're destined, though. He said, you know, you need the divine intervention. And when he said that word, the divine intervention, it went deep down in the marrow of my bones. I mean, like a lightning bolt. Boom! You know, right deep down in the marrow of my bones it went. And I understood it. That knowledge flipped right in midair, and it went to wisdom and went right in my heart. And I knew right then and there that I needed, not want, not nice. I needed this deep, effective spiritual experience. And that I needed to go through the process of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, not to be a good guy, not to get good, but to tap in to this force that was going to keep my brain from ever thinking it was a good idea, you know, to take a drink. And they used to say, Dick, you can do anything in life, you know, you want to do, as long as it doesn't lead you into the drinking. You know why you got to stay away from your friends, Dick? Not because they ain't friends, they don't visit you, you know, all that goofy stuff we hear around AA. It's because you, Dick, you don't have enough guts right now to say no to a drink. You don't have the power to say no to a drink. They're going to be nice guys. They're your friends. They're going to offer you a drink. So the reason why that you have to stay away from them is you, Dick, not them. And I always like that because I've got some good friends that drink. And, I mean, all my drinking friends aren't bad people. Now, you know, they don't offer me a drink. You know, because you know, they know, you know what I'm all about and all that. So, anyway, I started down that path and things started getting good for me. I didn't take a drink one day at a time. I started feeling that power source. I remember I was fortunate. They didn't make this big intellectual trip through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember I did my fifth step, happened to be on Fifth Avenue up in Baltimore, you know, with Lou Haynes. And Lou said, I took my fourth step, and I said to him, I said, I really can't get into all this fear stuff and all that. He said, Dick, there's only seven things wrong with you. It's the seven deadly sins. You get them straightened out, you're all right. I thought, damn. He said, I want you to take seven pieces of paper. You put one of them sins on a piece of paper, turn it over, and then I shuffle it up. Start on a Sunday. He said, and take a piece of paper out, pray about it, think about it, think about your life, and see how that word fits your life, and write down everything that you can do about it. Go to work, I'll pray about it, you know what I mean? I'll write down everything that you can about that word. I said, well, why am I starting on a Sunday? He said, because you'll know next Sunday you ought to be done. It's seven sins, 7 days. And that's what I did. And then I did my fifth step. I didn't understand. It wasn't so much about me getting everything out as me starting, putting it down, meeting them, you know, with him, and him pulling everything else out. And he said to me, no matter, you know, what the last word is, you put down on there the one thing you don't want anybody in the whole world to find out about you. And I thought, how does that guy know, that I got something like that? And I did. I took my fifth step with him, and he said to me, did you honestly skip anything? I said, no. He said, okay. He said, Dick, guys like you cannot, under any circumstances, ever be totally honest. So just be as honest as you can at the time of you're doing the steps. Self-honesty. You'll know whether you're honest or not. I said, why do I have to write some of this stuff down? Why can't I just memorize it? He said, because you can't write a lie. You can write it, but you'll know if it's the truth or not. There's something about the brain and the hand, you can't write a lie without knowing it. They made sense out of all these things that they told me to do, not just do it because it was this and that. And when I got done my fifth step, and he said, you feel like you did okay with that, you know? And he shared a lot worse things with me, which made me very, very comfortable the very next time I bumped into him at the next AA meeting, thinking about my fifth step and everything I said. I didn't feel like I was, being looked upon or. And I never heard this guy once. He died with 30-some years. I never heard him once. In the years I was sober, I think I had him for a sponsor about 10 years. Not once did he even tell me who took the fifth step with him. Everything was confidential. Now, other people would say, hey, look, I took my fifth step with Lou, but Lou never said it. And I always knew that the confidence was there. So anyway, I got done, and he said, said, you want God to take away your character defects? I said, yeah. He said, kneel down. And it's the first time I felt comfortable kneeling down, holding the guy's hand. And he said, ask God to take them away. And I did. I bet that took about 35 seconds. Now, I know that's heresy around AA. 35 seconds, maybe a minute. He said, now, you want God to take away your shortcomings? I said, he said, ask him while you're here. And I did. He said, you can't do a damn thing about them, but march ahead. And God will take them away to the degree that you are willing. And I got up out of that, and the big thing that happened unto me was my belief in God switched to faith in God. It was just like it flipped. I had faith in God. I do have faith in God. Everything that happens in my life is in my best interest. Reason why I say my name's Dick G, because I have a hard time, unless I build up to it, saying certain words, like the word ambulance. Unless I built up to that, I couldn't say that. I mean, many a day I'd see the the meat wagon, I'd run down the road, and I'd say, there goes the meat wagon. And guys would say, oh, you're so crude, you know what I mean? But I didn't care, you know? I mean, I couldn't say that word, ambulance, you know? Well, I have a hard time saying the word Gillespie. So people say, well, just stay away from words when you can't say it. So I say, my name's Dick G, you know, for years and years and years. And that's due because, you know, when I came into AA, well, actually, about 4 years old, they say I fell off the stool and I woke up a stutter. I mean, really stutter. I ain't talking about just a word or two. I'm talking about just, I mean, terrible. And it just plagued my whole life. Even in the steel mills and everything, I couldn't take jobs that were on walkie-talkies or telephones or anything like that, you know what I mean? And I would stutter. Many electricians fixed many a microphone because, you know, they weren't working, you know? So anyway, I came into AA, and I stuttered, and I couldn't say I'm into my own name, and that was a joke around the ballroom for a long while, you know, but I got used to saying, I'm Dick G, I'm Dick G, hi, how you doing, I'm Dick G. And so my friend Lou, I mean, we're in this setting with a bunch of people. There was about 100 people there, and Lou's talking to a couple people. And you can tell them the good friends. If you come to an AA meeting early and just watch people, you'll see good friends. Good friends I take for granted, they're good friends, and butt right into their friends' conversations. They don't say, pardon me. They just come right up and butt right in, you know. Well, that's what I did, you know. I walk right up. Lou was talking to three other people, and I walk right up, and I said to him, Lou. And I don't know why, but as loud as he could, he turned around to me and he said, why don't you stop that stutter? Now, I'm devastated. Two reasons. I love this guy. I mean, him and I were great friends. He was my sponsor. He was older. He was like a father and all this here. And I'm turning red. And I'm devastated. I thought, yeah, what the hell? And the only thing I could think of was, I said, how am I going to do that? And he said, real loud now. You know, I mean, everybody's looking. They're all stopped. You know, they think something major's happened. He said, shut up. I've never heard anybody stutter. Just shut up. Now, I was devastated. I wanted to cry, but I wasn't going to cry with all the men in there. And I thought, son of a, you know. I mean, man, if I had a baseball bat, I'd have hit him across the head. And I walked outside. And I said to myself, I am never getting in a position again. Before I stutter, I'm going to shut up. And I started on a quest of every time I start to stammer, I stop talking. Now, sometimes I would stop on the word the, and there would be some guy in the audience who was very bright, and he'd be saying, the, Dick, the, the word the. And I don't pay him any attention, you know, and I would stop. And the pauses got shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. I spoke up Wisconsin Dells one time, you know, and there was about 800 people there, and they all come up. And nice talk, you know. And I'd like to have a buck for every time they said to me, Dick, do you know, what we like about your talk, you know? And I wasn't sober enough, not to be a smart ass, you know. Smart ass is somebody inside, you know. I mean, I was sober enough not to have it outside. But inside, I said everything, you know, just a smart, you know. I'd like to think I kind of got over that in the next 19 years. But anyway, they said, we love, You know, we love, you know, the way you stop and think about, you know, what you're going to say. You know? And I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't have to tell all my secrets, you know. So those pauses, and that's what happened. Circumstances are sometimes a throws you, and you need people to put you on the right track. My daughter, she got pregnant. Now, I know all the answers I can give you, but this is my daughter. It's different. It's different, you know? I mean, I would give the same advice to somebody who would try to get, no, you don't, this is my kid now, you know? And a kid that lived in the neighborhood. And I saw this kid. And I'm smart enough for him to pay attention around. Hey, I knew I could go and take my car and run the kid down, then take a drink and get 45 AA people to say, Dick had a little relapse, you know what I mean? He really didn't mean it, you know? And I thought about that. I thought, man, that kid take advantage of my daughter. Well, anyway, old Lou, he always listened to the Oriole game outside in a car, eating ice cream up until the 8 o'clock in a meeting I would start, you know? So I saw him over there, and I walked over to his car, and I said, hi, Lou, how you doing? He said, okay. He said, no, what about you? I said, I'm doing great, you know, one day at a time, dance over. He said, Dick, I have been eating ice cream in this car ever since you came to AA. He said, and you've never walked over here once. Now, what is the problem? And I went on to tell him about this rotten kid that took advantage of my kid, got her pregnant, and I see him, and I want to kill him. And he stopped eating his ice cream, and he said, damn, I'm sorry to hear, you know, your daughter got raped. And I said, she didn't get raped. He said, oh. And started eating his ice cream. He lined the facts up. Let's get the facts straight here, Dick. Now, it doesn't make it any easier, but the facts are straightened out. And he said, your job is to help her. Not worry about him. Help her. So the child was born severely deformed. Feet up underneath the chin. Just severely deformed. And I thought, damn, I mean, you know what I mean? So I thought, well, okay, you know, I paid taxes. I only collected unemployment of 1 week and all my years, of working and all that. I'll go down to Balmer City, put her on welfare. You know, they got this program for kids and all that. So I took her down there, and she said, let me check my watch here, huh? I'm going to be running it over. What time is it? 9:03? 7:03?
No, 7 minutes out.
Oh. Seven of, what you say? Let me see my watch. Okay. Hey, I'm from the old school. The mind will only endure, the mind will only absorb what the ass will endure. So, you know what I mean? I don't want to run it over. So, but anyway, so I took her down there, and they said, well, throw the kid out, and then, you know, we'll give her. Oh, you mean the benefits? I said, I can't throw my daughter out. They said, well, then she ain't going to get the benefits. You know, so I start talking to people. And there's well-meaning good friends. You mean, they spread some clothes around my house. If they call, I'll say Sandy lives down here and all that. So I said, okay. You know, I'm going to do that. Because why not? The kid needs help. You know what I mean? Good motive. You know? The kid needs help. My problem was I was sharing everything with Lou over there. And I said to Lou, hey, Lou, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to spread some clothes around George's house and all that, if they come and all that. And here is the power of the program, of the people who's got it. He said, Dick, you've came down this road of honesty too far to a turnaround now, and you walked away. And just that sentence made me change my mind, go home, hug my daughter, and say, I don't care if we lose the house, we're not going to lie about this stuff. 2 weeks later, I hear a knock on the door. Open the door. Yes? We understand that you got a sick child here. We like helping sick children. Can we see the child? I said, sure, come on in. You know what I mean? I don't know who the hell this guy is. You know what I mean? I've never seen him before, you know, but. He said, okay. He said, we're going to have a clinic, he said, down Eastern Shore. He said, can you bring the child down to clinic? I said, sure. You know what I mean? Anyway, it was a blizzard, and I couldn't make it. And I thought, well, hell with it. I'm going to make it anyway. Grandiose. You know what I mean? The kid needs help. You know what I mean? I'll kill us where we're going to go. You know? I mean, all these dumb things, you know, but in the spirit, you know what I mean? I think all that grandiose is making me look good and all that stuff. Anyway, the phone rings, and they said, look, no, we can't make it, but can you bring the child down at Charles Street, because, you know, we can land at the BWI airport. And I said, sure. So I took him down, and they looked at the child. His name was David. And they said, look, David qualifies in a four-hour program. We understand, you're going to want to help us. We can't take your money, Mr. Gillespie. Don't worry about it. Our budget's $240 million. We got more money than you'll ever think we got. We only need for you to answer a few questions. The child has to go to Philadelphia. You need to tell us if you need a bus, a car, a van, or what. I said, what do I need that for? They said, we'll take anybody, up there with David that makes you feel comfortable. We'll take the kids across the street. We'll take the neighbors. Or we'll take you. We'll take your wife. Or we'll take anybody. And I thought, damn. Now, had I lied, he would have never got that treatment because he started going to Philadelphia day in, day out, week in, week out. And they worked on him. And he's now 23 years old. He's a karate expert. He runs, he plays ball, he does everything. He got totally real well because I didn't lie and stick him into a program that meant well, but their budget probably would have been $40,000 or something like that. I don't know what's good for me. All I have to do is follow that path of the other alcoholic that has already forged it. I don't have to think it up. So anyway, I wish I'd have got my thoughts a little bit clearer, but I'm a big book guy. I believe in the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to believe in it. You can be like me. You can be riding that horse real well and then get drunk and then say, damn, I remember that guy, Dick G. I said something about it like that. Or else you can find yourself a sponsor who has worked the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous and don't trust him. Before you ask him about to be a sponsor, say, tell me something about your step that you took. And if he can't tell you how to work the steps, either shoot him or go find another sponsor. Because sooner or later, he's going to lead you down the wrong path. Not because he's a bad guy, but because he just doesn't know any better. I used to sit at meetings and I'd hear people say things like this. Well, I'm not sure my program will work for you. Now, here I am brand new, coming off the drunk and don't want to drink no more. And I hear that. And inside I'm screaming, shut up. I don't want to hear your program. I want to hear what's going to work for me. I'm tired of getting drunk. I'm tired of building my kids up. I'm tired of being on a short end of the stick. I'm tired of having good jobs and losing them. I'm tired of being a bad husband. Tell me what's going to work for me. And then some old guy would say, here's a program that works for everybody who is honest enough with themselves to do the best they can and apply these steps. And I said, that's what I want to do. And I wish I had a big book. Have you got a big book? Real quick. Well, anyway, that's all right. That's okay. In a vision for you. Thank you. In the vision for you, which is, I'd like to say it's my favorite chapter, but that's hard to say. Whenever you think of before that, saved your life so you can enjoy sitting on a boat. You know what I mean? Gonna make me get my glasses out, or I made myself get the glasses. See how I want to blame somebody else? It says here, now I'll tell you, this is where you're going to go. If you follow into the path of the other alcoholic or through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, one day at a time. Helping alcoholics works when, don't get into this stuff. Well, I helped my neighbor yesterday. Does that count? Sure, it counts. But it doesn't count about keeping you sober as much as helping other alcoholics Don't let that easy way out keep you from the real jewel. Anyway, it says here there's a substitute is vastly more than that. It's talking about, are you going to be dull around AA? Like a New Year's is coming. I'll tell you one thing, AA has some hell of a good New Year's. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find a release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. What the hell more do we want out of life? And I'm here to tell you that I didn't believe it. I did it, and I got it. And I got it by following the path of the other alcoholic. Not because of being smart, dumb, in between or anything. I just did what other alcoholics did. Followed their path through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you very much.